Well, we're talking about husbands this morning and tonight, and then we'll talk about wives next week. So, wives, you're off the hook this time. My wife was already nudging me, you know, and I said, your turn's coming. So, of all the commands that are given to men in general in the New Testament, there's really only two specific commandments given to husbands. First of all, in Ephesians 5:25 and repeated in Colossians 3:19. Husbands, love your wives. We're going to talk about that in this lesson. 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 7 says that we are to live with our wives in an understanding way. That's our lesson tonight. What does that mean, an understanding way? What does it not mean? All of our focus on responsibility, duty, leadership, stewardship, etc. is incomplete without addressing these two commandments. I understand it's not necessary to be a husband in order to be a Christian. But if you are a Christian and a husband, it is absolutely critical that you understand that you are to love your wife in an understanding way. Because these are commandments given to us by God. These are not options. If you wish to be right with God, husbands or husbands-to-be, then this is what is asked of you. You are to learn these things and then to put them into practice. Of course, our wives should be our soulmates, our helpmates, our lifelong partners. To love our wives, then, is to act in her best interest. That's a favorable thing in her side, of course, and then to be in favor in God's side. And it's acting in your own best interest as well. So it's a win-win-win situation. Your wife benefits, God benefits, and you benefit as well. And that's exactly why it is given to us in this way. Now, the problem that we have with this here may not be rebellion, where someone simply shakes his fist at God and says, I will not do this. Sometimes that happens, but that's not always the case. Sometimes it's just a lack of knowledge. Like, what does it mean to love? Well, hopefully we'll address that to some extent. And sometimes it's a lack of desire or understanding in the way of, this is really important to you, or it should be. Because someone might say, well, this isn't important to me. It can't address everything in a single lesson, but this lesson's purpose is not to exhaust the subject, but rather to steer us in the right direction. I doubt, as I said, I'm going to give you anything new, but at least it will be in the packaging that it steers us all in the right direction. So when God says, love your wives, he's not talking about your definition of love, or your version of love, or your interpretation of love, but a kind of love with which God loves you. Like we see in John chapter 15, verse 12, where Jesus says, this is my commandment, that you love one another just as I have loved you. It's very clear then the objective that we have as being those who love, patterned after Jesus Christ. So when he says, love your wives, he's not saying whatever you define to be love, but he's saying in this manner. Sometimes what men do is they say, well, when I was growing up, my parents never taught me how to love properly. And I've heard this from a number of men over the years. In fact, I'm the same case. My parents never taught me how to love. I never saw real examples of love between my mom and my dad. My parents were divorced when I was 5 years old. I have no real memory of them sharing cherished moments together whatsoever. I really don't have any of that. And so I go into marriage then with a lack of understanding to some extent, just like many of you have. And these things are unfortunate, but they are not meant to be a permanent condition. Christians are not taught to love as their parents loved them. They are taught to love one another, and husbands, love your wives, as Christ has loved us. And what that does then is it provides a universal objective. It doesn't matter who did or did not love you in your past, or who does or does not love you right now. You have a universal idea, a universal objective, and therefore a universal application of who you are to love and how you are to love. Someone says, well, I'll certainly love as soon as someone loves me. Well, that's not how Christ loves. Christ loves anyway. He loves unconditionally. And you're not going to learn ideally how to love your wives, husbands, by hearing sermons. I know that kind of defeats this whole purpose here, doesn't it? But This is not the ideal means. This is a tool, and that's all it is. You're not going to learn how to love your wives by watching self-help videos, although they have a place and they can help too, or marriage seminars and those sort of things. Those things are all tools, but they cannot replace the ideal lesson, and that is by learning Christ and how He loves. Recall last week's lesson, practicing the truth. It is not enough to know about the truth. You have to put it into practice. Likewise, it is not enough to read about how Christ loves. You are supposed to implement that love in your own life as well. Put it into practice. Well, before we approach this subject in a positive way, it might help us to examine it from a negative point of view. I don't mean be negative about it, but it's a negative point of view, which means that we're looking at what we should not be doing. In other words, how not to love. First of all, a Christian husband ought not to love selfishly, where you, husband, are the ultimate context for anything that is done, where everything always comes back to how is this going to benefit me somehow. Well, the fact is, if you love like God asks you to love, it will benefit you. But that's not your primary motive. Your primary motive is a love like God or Christ loves. A husband can love his wife according to his own definition of love and still be very self-serving. In other words, he's loving her, but it's a love that is not defined by Scripture, and he calls it love, and she might even look at it and say, well, I guess it's kind of like love, but it's really not love at all. It's just another form of selfishness. For example, a husband may take his wife out to a dinner and movie, but he only goes to the restaurants that he likes, and he only goes to the movies that he wants to see. In other words, it's all about him. Wife, you're getting a dinner and movie. You should be happy, right? Yeah, but really it's about you more than it is about me, right? She's saying. Or he may bring home flowers and gifts, but only to butter her up for what he wants. He may buy her a new car, but only because he wants this to be a good reflection on him and his status. He may apologize to her, but only to end the confrontation, not because he's sorry and not because he believes he's wrong. It's all about him. It's a selfish love, which really isn't a love at all, not like God defines love. So a husband cannot reduce every word, every action, every event, every gesture to, how's this going to work out in my benefit? How's this all going to work around so that I get what I want? How am I going to be self-gratified, if you will? And a Christian husband cannot love incidentally, like every now and then, as an afterthought, almost haphazardly, or only on special occasions. It just kind of galls me sometimes. We see our society focusing everyone's attention on Valentine's Day or something like that. Like, that's the only time, guys, when we can go out and buy gifts for our wives and all the other days, it doesn't matter. It's really not supposed to be that way. I don't mean we buy gifts every day, can't afford that, but the point here is that cards and letters and flowers and gifts and little things don't require a holiday. And when that is the only time that a husband demonstrates any gesture of his love, well, then that's pretty empty, plastic, meaningless love, isn't it? Husbands ought to always be thinking of their wives, and I know this might disappoint some wives to hear this, they don't have to buy something to prove that. Just kind words, a tender embrace, a touch on the arm, a cup of coffee without being requested. These are all acts of love as well. The truth is, husbands like the same thing. They like all these acts of love and gestures of love being shown to them, And I have to admit, I think women are better at that than guys are. They're just more perceptive to that. But husbands can learn, and then they can practice these very things. A Christian husband must not love under duress. What we mean here is only when he's ridden with guilt, only when others are watching, only when he's pressured by his peers or pressured by sermons. I should probably include that as well, okay? Love under duress is not that agape love, which is the Greek word for this selfless, sacrificial kind of love with which God, Christ loves us. When a husband is acting out of fear, then his desire, rather, is not genuine. For example, I have seen just about anywhere I've been over the last 30-plus years, a husband and a wife, the marriage starts deteriorating, and the husband starts ramping up all his efforts to win back his wife. And, you know, so he starts doting upon her and giving, buying her things and giving her all these things. And the fact is, some of this should have been done all along. He just kind of ignored it or didn't pay attention to this, etc. In fact, there's an occasion right now, as we speak, where a husband and wife's marriage in Alaska that I know about is deteriorating under these very same circumstances. The husband kind of been ignoring his wife, kind of been self-absorbed in his own troubles and life and everything else. And the wife finally said, enough, I'm out of here. And now he's trying to, you know, scramble and come back. And even if he is genuine in his attempts there, still in the wife's mind it's going to be, yeah, the reason he's doing this is because he wants to get back to normal, whatever normal is. What happens when the emergency is over? What happens when the crisis is past? What kind of person is he going to be? I'm not saying a husband won't change permanently. What I'm saying is you can't use that only as an opportunity to finally show your love to your wife. True love does not need to be coached. It does not need to be prodded. It does not need to be threatened or intimidated. It just needs opportunity for expression. It needs to grow, and it needs to develop, and it needs to mature, which means that it requires to be practiced often. When we get into parenting, talking about parenting, you don't train your child once and then hope they remember that lesson for the rest of their lives. Like you told your child something when he was 5, and you're hoping by 13 he still remembers that lesson, right? You have to do it often, and you have to do it in different ways. And you have to do it, shall we say, in different expressions of teaching. And it's the same thing with loving your wives. You have to do it often, in different ways, and with different expressions as well. The real issue to all of these things here is motive. Motive is everything. If the motive is a godly one, well then love will happen, if you will. Love will come and do what it does and will serve the best interests of the party that is being loved, and that person will do well who does the loving. But if it is a selfish motive, then it's going to deteriorate. It's just plastic and it's not going to work in the way it was designed. One further warning to husbands as part of loving your wives, in Colossians 3:19, it says, husbands, love your wives and do not be embittered toward them or against them. We could translate this, do not be harsh toward them. Do not be cross with them. Do not be negative toward them. You have to wonder how many marriages suffer, perhaps, from a barely contained bitterness, where the husband's almost with gritted teeth, just barely able to hide his contempt or his resentment for his wife, for whatever reason it might be. And if you think about what Paul is saying there in Colossians, the verse before that, where he says, wives, respect your husbands as you respect the Lord, in essence there. If a wife is going to be in subjection to her husband, then the husband cannot treat her with scorn and contempt and resentment and condescension, because this prevents her from being in subjection. I'm not saying she's off the hook here. I'm saying it makes it difficult, if not downright impossible, for her to do her function or to carry out her responsibility in the way that God has given her to do. She can't function if she ought, if the husband is embittered toward her. And if he treats his wife as an underling or a servant or someone who is inferior, that husband may be bitter over something she did. She's not perfect. She makes mistakes, etc. But what it's really doing is revealing him as a person with little patience and low tolerance for error and very unforgiving. And perhaps I don't need to remind you, but I'll say it anyway, that those people who are unforgiving, whether they be husbands or not, are not going to be forgiven. I think Jesus is extremely clear on that point. If you want to be a forgiving person, well, that's a good thing to do. If you choose to be unforgiving and bitter, keep in mind that that's going to also prevent you from having fellowship with God, because God is not going to forgive people who are unforgiving. Instead, what he ought to do, instead of practicing those qualities or characteristics that he learned from worldly and godless men, what he ought to do is honor his wife, not merely as his wife, but if she is a Christian, as a sister in Christ, and therefore, as Peter says in 1 Peter 3:7, a fellow heir of the kingdom. And even if his wife is not a Christian, he still ought to treat her as an equal, as a human being, and not as someone inferior. In a sense, all this goes without saying, I hope. Treat one another with dignity and respect. Husbands, love your wives in that manner. In Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 25, I know it's part of the reading, but let's read a couple passages, a couple verses here that you see on the screen. Ephesians chapter 5, verse 25. Husbands, love your wives just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself up for her. Then down to verse 28. So husbands ought to love their own wives as their own bodies. He who loves his own wife loves himself, for no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it as Christ does the church. What I want to bring to your mind here is what you see on the screen, that Christ loved the church and did something for her. There's a historical event associated with that act of love. He did something to prove that he loved her. But he also presently loves her at the same time. What the scholars call a present infinitive here is it's an ever-present, ongoing action. In other words, there's never a time when Jesus did not love the church. And notice how he loved the church and loves the church deeply and seriously. Notice the depth and the seriousness of that love. In John chapter 5, verse 13, greater love is no one than this, that one lay down his life for his friends. Well, certainly, Jesus showed the greatest love to the church and that he did lay down his life for her. In 1 John 3:16, we're told to even lay down our lives for the brethren in a pattern after what Jesus did for the church. Now, point I want to make here is that if we're going to do that for the brethren, then certainly we ought to be willing to do that for our soulmate. Husbands, lay down your lives for your wives, if you understand what I'm saying here. The attitude then is, I will lay down my life for you, wife, and therefore I will also be willing to make any lesser sacrifice than that as well. Imagine a husband, for example, saying, wife, I just love you so much that I'll lay down my life for you if necessary. Imagine him saying that and how that must sound. And yet, in his demonstration, he is unwilling to seek her best interest, unwilling to treat her needs ahead of his own, and unwilling to show compassion. Here's a man who says, I am willing to make the ultimate sacrifice for you, but he's not willing to make the incidental sacrifices along the way, the daily sacrifices that are required in order to be her husband. Here's a man who's talking out of both sides of his mouth. And here's a man who ought not to be trusted in what he says if that's how he's going to reason. Because what he's really saying is, yeah, if it need be, I'll die for you, but I'm not going to live for you. How many Christians do that with the Lord? Oh, Lord, if it be necessary, I'll die for you. But they refuse to live for him on a daily basis. That same problem, that same contradiction can be present in a marriage. And it doesn't have to be that way, and it can be corrected. But that is a problem that needs to be addressed. Notice how continuously and actively Jesus still loves the church. When Jesus ascended to the right hand of God and sat down on the throne there, he did not say, all right, done with that whole church business. Now, what's the next order of business, right? The bride's best interest is ever before him. The mission of Christ, then, is to take care of his bride. Not on an incidental basis, not every now and then, not just when she cries for help, but always. All right, guys, I think you probably can relate to this. When I'm buying a gift, I'm on a mission. When I go to the store, say I go to Fred Meyer or something like this, I am on a mission. I know what I want in my head, and I'm going to go there, and I'm going to look for that specific thing. Other things, they all fade from view. I'm looking for the target, right? And when I find that one thing, I pick it out, I go to the counter, I pay for it, and I'm out of the store. I don't window shop, okay? Not for that. I've got the mission already accomplished. And that's how guys think sometimes. Not all guys, but that's how a lot of guys think. It's like, okay, I got to get a gift, and I know what I want, and I'm going to get it, and then once I got it, boom, gone, okay? Why? Sometimes that's why you only get one gift from guys, because we are only focused on the one thing. We got it, okay? My point here is that you can't treat love that way, like an item on the checklist. You just can't do that. Like, okay, today I got to love my wife. And you go up to her and give her a big hug and a kiss and go, okay, there you go. I love you. And then now you're done. Mission accomplished, right? You can't treat love that way. And you certainly can't treat your wife that way. Loving your wife must be something on the forefront of your mind, whether she's with you or not. She's not an item on your checklist. She's a living soul whom you promise to take responsibility for, who you promise to manage and to nurture. That is a lifelong ambition. It's not something you check off, either on a daily or weekly or yearly basis. And that helps us then to appreciate Christ's love for us. Christ doesn't just check off either. He doesn't just say, yep, I helped Chad today, done with that. Who else can I help, or who else needs my assistance? He's always helping Chad, and he's always helping you. He's always helping his church, and he wants to do that. Why? Because that's the nature of his love. Selfless, sacrificial, always attentive. Some visible expressions of this love may include you hold her hand when you're walking to the store, or maybe just sitting down for coffee. You give her a hug, even after she just broke your favorite coffee mug. Guys, can happen, right? Or wreck the car or something like that. You are affectionate with her without any ulterior motives or expectations. I think, guys, you know what I'm talking about. You go for a walk or a jog or a drive with her, something that allows you to be together with her. Time alone spent with her. You invite her to a special date, not because it's Valentine's Day, but just because. Just because we love each other, and we're going out on a date. We don't care what the calendar says. You go out of your way to do something for her. Maybe it's something you don't like to do, but if you don't like to do it, maybe she doesn't like to do it either. And it just needs to get done. And you volunteer to do it. You go run an errand. You fold laundry. You do the dishes. I don't care. Whatever it might be. Okay? But you do that not because, fine, I'll do it because she expects me to do it. You do it because you love her and you want to help her with what she does. You make it a priority to spend time with her without the kids, without family, and without friends around. There's a time when you can spend time with your wife in the inclusion of your friends and family. But that cannot be the only time that you spend time with your wife. You treat her like an intelligent person, and therefore you value her opinion, and you ask her for her input. And you actually listen to that input, and you go, wow, that's better than what I came up with. And you actually mean it, okay? You don't sit there and go, wife, you got any input? Okay, well, I'm going to do this anyway, and go off with what you planned to do in the first place. That's not really what we're talking about here. We're talking about treating your wife as an equal with you, maybe even smarter than you, husbands. And you take her on an unexpected expedition somewhere. Get takeout food and eat it at some special place. Take a walk to see the full moon or a meteor shower or something like that. Go watch the sunset together. Or you lie close to her with your arm around her and you share your intimate feelings and your dreams and ambitions. I got a little ahead there. And you ask her about your own, or her own rather, ambitions and dreams without the TV on, guys. Okay? Don't do the thing where, you know, you're propped up, you know, on the couch next to each other and commercial comes on. You go, okay, so what's your ambitions? What makes you tick? What do you love? And, oh, hang on. Show's back on. I mean, just think about how that comes across, okay? And not just how rude it is, but also how what you're saying. Remember when we talked in our lesson on communication, sometimes it's your selections that communicates things. And if you select to talk to your wife only during commercial breaks, you're speaking very loudly about what you think of her. This TV show is more important than you. It's what you said. You didn't have to say it. It's what you said. Love cannot be interpreted according to your own taste, to your own desires, to your own expectations. And those who insist on that need to make a choice. In other words, if you're going to insist on loving only as you want to love, then you're going to have to choose that kind of love versus Christ's kind of love, because these two loves are incompatible. You cannot marry them together. They don't work with each other. You're choosing one or the other. You can't do them both. So with that, notice the qualifiers that Paul attached to love here. And this applies to husband, but it also applies to every believer in regard to love itself. As Christ loved the church, this is not a gray area. This is not open to various interpretations. This means that you are acting in her best interest, as opposed to treating her like a stepping stone or doing things at her expense. You act in her best interest. Now, everyone thinks they know probably what best interest is. One thing that it is not is whatever makes her happy. Because this word happy gets misunderstood. Sometimes people think that, guys think that, if my wife beams from ear to ear with a smile because of the thing I've done for her, a gift I've given to her, that's acting in her best interest. And I'm here to be the unpopular person to tell you that that is not necessarily true at all. Giving your wife material gifts may not be in her best interest. Giving your wife everything that she wants may not be in her best interest. And supporting your wife in things that she's doing that are not very wise, are not of sound judgment, and are not leading her or her family in the right direction is not in her best interest. So, but best interest here, what it really means is not being fixated on superficial happiness, but rather nurturing her character and her spiritual welfare. So best interest then means whatever fulfills her needs as a human being or as a human person, and at the same time advances her relationship with God. That would be in her best interest, whatever that is. Whatever is supporting her spiritual needs. Those are the overarching concerns, husbands. That doesn't mean you can't give her gifts, and it doesn't mean sometimes you can't splurge and give her something that's totally impractical and, you know, and materialistic. What it means is don't confuse best interest with those things. Because sometimes saying no is actually in her best interest. And if you are a husband whose heart is trained to discern right from wrong, good from evil, and what is right with God as opposed to what is wrong with God, you will know which answer to give. The other part, the other qualifier here is as their own bodies. Now, judging from pot bellies, sagging muscles, mismatched clothing, and unclipped fingernails of many husbands, this may be a bit misunderstood. Your wife might be looking at you going, seriously? Like that? You're not really loving yourself too much there. So we have to back up and look at this in a bigger picture view. What we're really looking at here is as is in his best interest. You love your wife with the same mentality that you love yourself, serving your own best interest, not literally your physical appearance, but taking care of your health, taking care of your life, taking care of your survival. You help her with those same things as well. And sometimes guys just don't get this. I have seen husbands who do not hesitate to spend freely hundreds of dollars on themselves for whatever it is. They're buying tools, or they're going on a trip, or they're buying fishing gear. And then the wife wants to go and get her hair done, and it's going to cost, you know, $40 or $50. And they're like, oh, I don't think so. We don't have that kind of money, you know. Or they're just simply saying, well, you know, you can just do with a cheaper haircut. I mean, come on, think about it. We don't need to, you know, get all, you know, ridiculous here. And you're looking at that, and you're saying, you're okay when it comes to your, what you consider at least your best interest. But when it comes to your wife, it's always going to be inferior, economical, and the cheapest route possible. And I've seen husbands do that. It's very demeaning. And I'm not saying that that they should lavish money on their wives in the same way they've lavished it on themselves. Maybe they haven't been spending money at all, period, in a very good way. What I'm saying is, there needs to be, instead of hypocrisy and contradiction, there needs to be an equality here. We don't always do that. Matthew 7, verse 12, do unto others as you want them to do to you. For husbands, this means do unto your wives as you would like your wives to do for you. How would you like it, husbands? And maybe you're okay with the scenario that you're living in, but how would you like it if your wife treated you like you treat her. And think about that and let that sink in, okay? And if necessary, apologize to your wife this afternoon, okay? Here's a real test. In 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verse 4 through 7. This is the real test right here about love. If you are doubting and wondering, go to 1 Corinthians 13 and start in verse 4. Love is patient, love is kind, love is not jealous, love does not brag, is not arrogant. And start plugging your name in, husbands, and see how you do. Chad is patient. Chad is kind. Chad is not jealous. Chad does not brag and is not arrogant. Chad does not act unbecomingly, etc. I'm going to stop because I'm failing already. But my whole point here is that we do have a prescription, if you will. We do have instruction about how to love. And it's right here. If you really want to know how to love your wife, go to this passage and do all the things that Paul lays out here. And I guarantee you will be loving your wife and she will be loving that. Okay? In short, you are to love your wife like Christ loves the church in these three main areas. First of all, in the area of leadership. I am a firm believer, you don't have to agree with this, but I'm a firm believer that women actually desire and enjoy strong, masculine, effective leadership. That's what they want. But that's not always what they get. What they get sometimes is spinelessness, like the husband doesn't know, wringing his hands, can't make a decision. Or overbearing, domination. Wife, this is what we're going to do. Don't you dare try to tell me otherwise. You know, that's sometimes what wives get, one extreme or the other. You know, the spineless or the domineering. And that's what brings them grief. Notice, however, the firm yet gentle manner in which Christ deals with the church. And what you're seeing there is, once again, strong, masculine, effective leadership. It's the steel and velvet approach. And some guy years ago wrote a book called Steel and Velvet. And guys, if you haven't read it, I advise you to read it, okay? Because it goes into this very thing. How to be steel, yes, and also how to be velvet. And it's a good book to read. The second area here is that of nurturing. It doesn't mean that you treat your wife like a helpless little waif or like a little child. And honestly, it just galls me when I see husbands treating their wives like their little children. Like the wife can't do anything, like she's incompetent, like she is no better or more mature than one of the children themselves. What it means here is to take special care to provide for her needs physically, mentally, emotionally, yes, spiritually, and to freely extend grace and mercy as needed. In other words, when she makes a mistake, you're not there to beat her up and say, I told you so. You're there to take her in and put your arms around her and say, I forgive you, and we're going to do better here. I'm going to help you from this point forward. And be faithful to her. Faithfulness. This goes far beyond sexual fidelity. It means do not equate or replace her with any other earthly love or person. Jesus' bride has no equal, has no parallel. She is unique. She is special. She is his foremost priority. And take that to heart. That's how it should be. How a husband loves his wife or fails to love his wife bears directly on other spiritual areas, whether that man realizes it or not. It bears upon how he represents Christ to others. Imagine a husband who cannot act Christ-like in his own home and marriage, and now we're going to send him out to teach the gospel or represent Christ. It bears upon how he represents the church or the congregation. Is my strong opinion, and this is just Chad's opinion, that if a man refuses to lead his own household and be the husband to his wife that he ought to be, he ought never to be up here leading on the Lord's Supper, leading in songs, giving sermons, or anything else. I'm not enforcing that because that's not my right to do that, but I'm telling you where that ought to be applied as far as leadership here. If you can't represent yourself right in the privacy of your own home, you have no business representing this congregation. And it also bears upon how serious and committed he is to Christ and to Christ's gospel. If he claims to be obedient to Christ and yet he stubbornly refuses to love his wife and in an understanding way, we have a problem. That's called rebellion and disobedience. God does not think highly of either one. So it bears upon his reverence toward God. If God says in Scripture, this is what I expect, and the man decides, well, I know he says this, but, and whatever is the insert for that, okay, it doesn't matter, but I determined to do it differently, we also have a problem, because that what that man is really saying is, I just don't respect God or his word. And ultimately, this is going to impact whether or not that person is even going to be saved at all. It is my understanding, based on Scripture, that there might be husbands' souls that are lost. Husbands who went to church, prayed prayers, ate the Lord's Supper, sang songs, hymns of praise, but refused to love their wives as Christ loves the church. I just don't know how to reconcile those two things, where a man simply says, I will not, and then enter in good and faithful servant. I don't know how to reconcile that. So we must appreciate the context in which this instruction is given. These are commands here. These are not apostolic suggestions. And so it bears directly on the soul, on our walk with God, on our allegiance with Christ, and yes, even our future in the afterlife. In the big picture analysis, your marriage really has less to do with your spouse than it does with your relationship with God. If you think about it, how you treat your wife really is very telling about what you think of God, is what I mean by that statement. I don't mean to end that on a somber note, but we do need to take this seriously. We can use silly illustrations and we can laugh about how this is done wrongly and so on, and the quirks and idiosyncrasies of women and men. We can all giggle over those things, but the fact is, this is serious stuff, and we need to take it seriously. That's our lesson this morning. Tonight is the other half of that. I invite you to come back to hear that. We're going to talk about it in an understanding way. If there's anyone that is subject to our invitation this morning, if you need to respond to that by coming forward, this will be your time in the service to respond to that.